The assumption that work scales with people is so deeply embedded in how organizations operate that questioning it feels like questioning gravity. A team of 5 ships, 5 things. A team of 10 ships, 10 things. Need more output? Hire more people. The math feels obvious. It's also wrong, and it's been wrong for a while, but the tools we had kept the illusion plausible. When every task required a human to perform it start to finish, headcount and output really did correlate. Not perfectly, but close enough that the model held. That model is breaking. Not theoretically, not in some future state that futurists like to project onto PowerPoint slides. Right now. A single operator running 10 distinct operations simultaneously, each with its own scope, its own goals, its own rhythm. Not managing 10 things superficially, actually executing substantive work across all of them in a single day. The kind of day that would have previously required a department. The question this raises isn't about productivity metrics or efficiency gains. It's about what organizations are actually buying when they hire. If one person with the right decision-making capacity and the right tools can do what previously required a team, then headcount was never what determined output. Judgment was. Headcount was just the delivery mechanism for judgment, and we confused the vehicle for the cargo. Every hospital in the country has a version of this problem. A veteran nurse notices something wrong with a patient before the lab results come back. She's seen this pattern before. She knows what to order, who to call, when to escalate. Then she retires, and they hire 2 new nurses to replace her. The staffing ratio looks fine. The experience ratio is catastrophic. The hospital didn't lose 1 unit of labor. It lost a decision-making capability that took 30 years to develop. No amount of additional headcount restores it, because the thing that mattered was never the hands. It was the judgment directing the hands. Organizations make this mistake constantly. They count contributors when they should be measuring the quality of decisions those contributors can make. A team of 12 junior analysts produces less insight than 2 senior ones, not because the juniors aren't working hard, but because they don't yet know which questions to ask. The work is happening. The output is being generated. The judgment is missing. AI changes this equation in a way that's hard to overstate. When execution is handled, when the hands are essentially unlimited, the only thing that matters is the quality of the decisions directing them. One person who knows what to look for, what to prioritize, what to ignore, and what constitutes done can now direct an operation that previously required dozens of people to execute. The bottleneck was always judgment. We just couldn't see it because execution was so expensive that it obscured everything else. Organizations that silence their own alarm systems don't do it maliciously. They do it for comfort. Think about a restaurant kitchen. A new cook joins the team and notices that the walk-in refrigerator temperature fluctuates by 4 degrees every afternoon. She mentions it. The head chef waves it off. It's been like that for years. Nothing's gone bad. Don't worry about it. The signal was real. The response was to normalize it. And the normalization sticks because the alternative, taking the walk-in offline, losing a day of service, paying for repairs, is painful and immediate, while the risk is abstract and deferred. This is how institutions develop blind spots. Not through a single dramatic failure, but through the daily practice of deciding that a particular signal isn't worth the disruption of responding to it. The fire alarm everyone ignores because it goes off during cooking. The customer complaint pattern that never gets escalated because each individual complaint seems minor. The near miss that gets logged but never analyzed. The organizational instinct to suppress discomforting signals is one of the most dangerous forces in institutional life. And it's not about bad people or bad intentions. It's about the asymmetry between the cost of responding, certain, immediate, disruptive, and the cost of ignoring, uncertain, deferred, possibly zero. Rational actors in that situation will almost always choose to ignore, every time, until the refrigerator finally fails and there's no food for Saturday night service. When inspection becomes continuous rather than periodic, the cost of responding drops dramatically. When finding a problem and fixing it can happen in the same motion, the old calculation breaks down. You don't need to take the walk-in offline for a day. You find the failing seal, replace it, move on. The barrier to addressing problems shifts from Can we afford to look? To can we afford not to? That inversion changes organizational behavior in ways that go far beyond efficiency. The expert bottleneck is one of the most expensive fictions in modern business. Security review requires a specialized team. Compliance audits need certified professionals. Quality assurance demands trained inspectors. These statements have been true for so long that they feel like laws of physics. They're not. They're descriptions of a world where the cost of expertise made it scarce, and scarcity forced organizations to batch expert attention into periodic, expensive events. A factory that can only afford an inspector once a quarter will accumulate 3 months of problems between inspections. This is not because quarterly inspection is the right cadence. It's because the inspector costs money and has limited time. The inspection schedule is a function of economics, not of risk. When the cost of inspection approaches zero, when thorough review can happen as fast as the work itself, the entire concept of the periodic audit dissolves, not the need for scrutiny, the need for batching it. Problems get found when they're introduced, not months later when someone finally gets around to looking. The gap between creation and correction shrinks to nearly nothing. This has implications well beyond operational efficiency. The expert bottleneck shaped organizational structure itself. We created entire departments, quality assurance, security operations, compliance teams, because expert attention was expensive and needed to be centralized and rationed. What happens to those structures when attention is no longer scarce? Not the judgment about what matters. The attention to look, something that should unsettle anyone who manages people. Consistency might be an emergent property, not a mandate. Large organizations spend enormous energy trying to standardize practices across divisions. Governance committees, style guides, mandatory training, architecture review boards. The underlying assumption is that consistency requires enforcement, that without a central authority defining and policing standards, each team will drift in its own direction until the organization becomes a federation of incompatible fiefdoms. There's truth to that in a world where change is expensive. If adopting a practice costs significant time and effort, teams will rationally defer it, and the fleet will diverge. But if the cost of upgrading approaches zero, something different happens. Teams adopt the same practices, not because a committee mandated them, but because there's no economic reason not to. Consistency becomes the path of least resistance rather than the path of most governance. This is a profound shift for anyone whose job involves organizational standards. The committee that decides which version of a tool everyone should use becomes less important than the system that makes adopting the latest version effortless. Governance moves from enforcement to enablement. The job isn't making people comply. It's making compliance the default. Most governance structures aren't ready for this. They're designed for a world where change is expensive and needs to be coordinated. They'll need to evolve from gatekeeping to gardening, from you must get approval to change, to we make change easy and the right choice obvious. The hardest organizational habit to break is processing things one at a time when they could be handled in parallel. Think about a school principal reviewing teacher evaluations. She reads one, writes her notes, schedules a meeting, has the conversation, then moves to the next one. Sequential, thorough, and agonizingly slow, because nothing about Evaluation 3 depends on the outcome of Evaluation 1. They could all be in flight simultaneously. But the habit of serialization runs deep, because for most of human history, our attention was the bottleneck. You could only think about one thing at a time, so you processed one thing at a time and you built systems that enforced sequential flow. When organizations grow, they tend to encode this serialization into process. The approval chain, the escalation ladder, the stage gate, each step must complete before the next begins. Some of this is genuinely sequential. You can't ship a product that hasn't been built, but much of it is sequential by convention, not by necessity. The legal review that waits for the marketing review that waits for the product review, when all three could happen at the same time, because they're looking at different things. The organizations that adapt fastest to this moment will be the ones that learn to identify false serialization, sequential dependencies that exist because of habit rather than logic. The meeting that seven people attend because one person needs to brief another. The review process, where three independent evaluators go in order instead of in parallel, the decision chain that routes through four desks when any one of them could have made the call. Untangling false serialization requires something uncomfortable, admitting that the sequence wasn't about quality or safety. It was about comfort. People like knowing what everyone before them decided. Evaluators like seeing previous evaluators' notes. Approvers like knowing who else has approved. The sequence isn't adding information. It's adding reassurance. And reassurance is expensive when it costs you 3 weeks of elapsed time on a decision that could have taken 3 days. All of this points to a question about what human work actually is in a world where execution scales without humans. The standard answer is strategy, or creativity, or emotional intelligence. Those answers are too flattering. They describe the best-case human contribution, not the actual one. Most of the human work in most organizations isn't strategic or creative. It's custodial, maintaining systems, processing cues, following up on things that should have been automatic. And a lot of what passes for strategy is really just choosing between options that someone else generated, which is less than it sounds like. The honest answer is closer to this. Human work is the work that requires caring about the outcome, not executing toward the outcome, not measuring the outcome, caring about it, deciding that this particular result for this particular person in this particular context matters, and bringing the full weight of experience, judgment, and attention to bear on it. A restaurant can automate its ordering system, its inventory, its scheduling, and its marketing. It cannot automate the chef tasting the sauce and deciding it needs another 30 seconds. Not because the tasting is technically impossible to automate, but because the decision about good enough is rooted in a standard that the chef chose based on a career of caring about food. The automation handles everything except the thing that makes the restaurant worth visiting. Scale without judgment produces volume. Judgment without scale produces bottlenecks. The combination is new, and we're still learning what it means to direct enormous execution capacity with limited human attention. The organizations that figure this out won't be the ones with the most people or the best tools. They'll be the ones that understand what their people are actually for and stop wasting them on work that doesn't need a human being present. So here's the question nobody in a boardroom is asking yet. If you removed every task in your organization that doesn't require human judgment, how many people would still have a full day's work? And if the answer is uncomfortable, what exactly have you been paying for all these years?